For by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week. It is the best Tuesday I've had all week, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show. In studio with me today is
Dixon.
Matt.
Yep.
I'm reading your headline, and it's certainly killing me.
Is it?
The dollar is dying.
Isn't it attention grabbing? I feel like I'm CNN or something
over here. So Matt is ultimately like the headline guy, I really like the headline based on, can I somehow be clever? Matt likes the headline like, can I somehow be incendiary?
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different style.
Talk to me about what you're thinking today. What are we talking about?
Yeah, it just, you know, right now we're kind of at a weird spot, right? And what stirred all of this was this idea of, like, how do you really go into the market or go into the world right now and do well, make money when interest rates are really high?
You just hire us.
Right? There you go.
So shameless plug, right?
Okay. There you go. We know that inflation's been bad. We know that the dollar right now actually historically pretty strong compared to where it's been in the past, but it seems like the dollar has started to fade a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's eroding to inflation.
I'm going to play a game today for our listeners. So if you guys are listening and you don't, I'm going to try to quiz Matt a little bit about this just to make sure that the terms are familiar. Okay. So
sure.
Would you say the dollar is strong
compared to other currencies?
Okay. So, yeah. So generally speaking, that would mean like, hey, if I'm going to go to a foreign country, the dollar's strong, that means I'm going to be able to buy more of their currency.
So exactly.
I can buy more stuff in other countries, but the problem is other countries, it's expensive to buy from us, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah.
Mostly?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it.
Okay,
right?
So the dollar is strong, and but it's getting less strong?
Yeah, the dollar's starting to...
Is it like reaching its the latter half of its middle ages and it needs to get in the gym more?
I think maybe just not print as much money over the last 5 years. My goodness. Okay. Isn't it crazy?
So
the U.S. money supply, David, has grown 40% between just the year 2020 and 2022.
Right.
So in 2 years.
I'm going to hit not the pause button, but the drill down button for a moment. Right. Because when you say that, first of all, does you mean like literally they fired up the printing presses?
That's exactly what they did.
Yeah. It's funny because just so you know, here's a dirty secret about money printing. It is a figure of speech. They can do it on a computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they don't actually have to physically conjure more dollar bills if there's more money in the system. They can just add zeros. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a staggering concept that, well, we can just invent money. Now, what happens if you do that?
It devalues the currency, right? Like,
it's such a loaded question because there's a part of me that's like, depending on who you ask, right? Like during COVID, what happens? Everybody says, sweet, I got spending money,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it somehow came from heaven and it wasn't going to have a negative
it's
impact.
That misconception of free money, right? Like,
I mean, we talked about there's going to be a number of things that come out in this show today, probably by accident. I'm going to talk a little bit about phantom bears, right? Phantom recessions, and then we'll talk about purchasing power risk.
And then Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, which is off of Broadway now.
Okay.
So, yeah. I think that was a couple years ago, the last show, so maybe a little less Phantom of the Opera.
Okay.
But anyway, it's cue the dark and minor chords.
Yes.
So, thanks, Matt.
I'm here to run you off the rails.
I'm trying to keep you on the rails. So, first of all, can you just rewind back for a minute and hit me with this idea of how much money printing? Like, first of all, it seems like this has been going on for a long time, like a lot of money printing.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes the last few years so extraordinary?
I mean, are you talking about on top of the fact that we went and printed all of it?
How much again? Repeat that number for our listeners.
We printed 40% of the money that exists.
Yeah. So
in 2 years.
Yeah.
And now it's 2025.
We increased the money supply by 40%.
Yeah.
Now, if we were to just say, let's pretend for a moment that the economy was a closed system with the exception of that, then what we would have effectively done is increased inflation, in theory, 40%.
I mean,
like you diluted your purchasing power 40%.
It's not, I mean.
That's not a fair example because
it's still
the economy
catching up.
Is growing.
Well,
right?
The economy's growing and we're still, I think, trying to reprice everything to post, COVID stuff where it's like, well, this happened. We printed the money and it's changed spending, right? That money came into the system and now we're having to reprice. And I think the stock market's been doing that too, right? Like, if you print all this money.
But let's talk about why for a second. I love to get down to kind of the really simple blocking and tackling concepts that drive
what
this.
What are you thinking?
Well, if you print money and you don't otherwise change other variables in the system, what you've really done is imagine the money was a bucket of water and you added 40% to it, right? If it was let's say it was juice, right? And you added 40% to it, what do you have? Watered down juice. Is it still juice? I guess.
It just
but it's
doesn't
not
hit
gonna
the
taste
same.
The same, right?
No.
Yeah, you it's not concentrated the same way. And so now it's an overly simplified example. Yeah, but stick around with me.
Well, it makes sense though. Here's another stat for you. The dollar has lost 44% of its value since the year 2000. So over the last 25 years, right? Yeah. And that's the crazy thing is, think about it this way. Imagine if you had in the year 2000 put $100,000 in your savings account. And then you did nothing. It just sat there. It grew no interest. And then you fast forward to today. Like $100,000 today.
Well, so put it this way. If you didn't earn at least 3% on a compound tax-deferred basis, and I'm just, if you don't know the rule of 72, that's what I'm doing, is just kind of going, well, 25 years, you need to earn about just a shade under, but let's call it 3% to keep the math easy, in order to keep pace with inflation. If you just put the money in a savings account or if you buried it in a coffee can in the backyard, you lost 44% of your purchasing power, right? The juice got diluted.
Yeah.
Okay? You have to earn at least 3% to
break
even with purchasing power. You're not getting ahead, right? You're just breaking even.
So that brings up a good question, right? Like right now we have some of the high yield money market accounts or CDs or whatever fixed income product you want to talk about. A lot of those are paying around 4 to 5%, but inflation has been a lot higher in the last few years than in years past. And so, even if you're got your money sitting there getting 5%, are you actually getting ahead, or are you still just getting poorer every year?
Yeah, and let's ask another kind of funky question about, the inflation in that one. Are you getting ahead? How much would it take to get ahead?
Right.
That's the thing.
That's the question,
And then what about taxes? How's that eating away at it? And are we even measuring inflation the right way? Because it's really weird to say, you lost all this purchasing power. And it kind of depends. Certain items have gotten so much more expensive. Eggs, right?
Right, but a TV.
Right. Well, that's the weird thing, right?
Yeah.
It seems like what we see now is, cell phones are getting more expensive. They used to be getting cheaper. Now they're getting more expensive and bigger, right? For a while, they were getting smaller and cheaper.
Everyone wants the most crazy technology.
Right. But televisions, they seem to be going down in price in general.
It's one of the few things.
Yeah,
because
right?
A vehicle.
The cost per inch is going up. But yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Way up.
I bought
Look at your grocery bills and what they are compared to what they were 3 years ago. Well, utility bills.
Yeah. Utilities have gone astronomically
higher.
Yeah,
I mean, like they're significantly more. If you used to pay $100 a month, you're probably paying $150 to $160 a month now. Maybe $200.
Yeah, Well, I bought a pickup, going back to the vehicles, in 2018 for like $32,000. That same truck now is $60,000, right? So mm-hmm. it's almost doubled in the last 7 years.
Yes. Yeah, so here's a trick question for you, and maybe one that we set up the break with, because our listeners are probably like, is there any hope at all?
There is.
Can prices go back down?
It depends on a lot, I think, with the consumer, yeah. right?
Well, here's kind of the question. Do you want them to?
I would argue probably no.
Yeah. I mean, the simple is maybe not, right?
Right.
But could they go back down? Yes. And we could kind of talk about, like, what's the backdrop that would cause that? I don't know if our listeners care.
Well,
right? Because I don't think it's real probable that it happens, honestly.
No, I don't think it is. So I kind of wanted to focus on, like, we've got, like, two really big groups of people right now, right? Like, the millennials, that's a big group of our population. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the group that's kind of retiring, right? Like, that 60-plus crowd.
So really what we have is people that are exiting the workforce and people that are in the workforce.
Yeah. So I kind of want to talk about, like, given the backdrop, given the fact that the dollar's kind of eroding in mm-hmm. value, mm-hmm. what can you actually do? What are some actionable ways that you can kind of fight against it?
I like this concept a lot. You know why I like it? It kind of transitions away from the complaining about, you know, because we talk a lot right. about, like, what's causing it. And we could all gripe about the politics of the day or the out of control spending or the lack of accountability or, you know, any the fraud, waste, abuse, like all the, you know, catchy talky points about how the whole system is rigged and terrible. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like howling at the moon in a certain respect.
Right.
Right. I mean, yes, you can cast your vote and, you know, good. You're all contributing to the mass opinion here. But we also know in a two-party system, rah, rah, rah. It's like, so great. We got to navigate this.
And let's talk about out-of-the-box ways to do it. Stuff you might not have thought about.
So we're going to do some problem solving. Or maybe if it's not problem solving, we're going to explore how might you navigate this gauntlet if we can't beat them. Then we got to figure out how to beat them.
That's right.
Right?
If you can't beat the dollar, beat the system.
Yeah, so that's it. We're talking about how can you be savvy in the system? But speaking of dollars, we have to take our first obscene profit break of the day. So we're going to do that and make sure that the lights stay on here. When we come back, we'll talk about how does one navigate. Let's not go. We get it. The dollar's getting weaker. So what do we do?
How do we get stronger?
All right. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Man, it's time already.
It doesn't seem possible that the break was that short.
That's awesome. We're back. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon. David, where do we leave them hanging?
With the plug for the podcast.
Okay.
How do they do that?
Go to the website, littlejohnfs.com.
Right. And tell all your friends, share with everybody, give us a reason to make more of these. It'll be awesome. We left people with this idea that the dollar ain't what it used to be.
No.
Right? And so...
But then we gave them the big but. But.
The big but.
You're welcome.
We're so sophomoric.
Yeah.
Okay. The big but. There are still ways that you might be able to navigate this as an investor. And even if you're not an investor, hey, if you're alive... And you probably have to eat, then you're probably going to need money. So let's talk about how you can insulate from a weakening dollar.
Well, let's break it apart. Let's break it into the working class, right? Like the people that are actively in the workforce.
Watch how I do this. This is a really professional and varsity radio trick. Hey, Matt, tell us how it works.
Yeah, there you go.
Now he's off.
I think we should break it apart, though, so that we start with that group that's actively working, and then we'll, you know, maybe in the next segment talk about the people that are either in retirement or quickly entering retirement in the next, you know, five plus years.
Retirement's a myth.
Yeah. That 60-plus crowd. We'll talk to them next.
No, you know what? We're just going to say the people that can retire and then the people that can't.
There you go.
You know who you are.
Yep. But so, like, with that kind of more millennial, and then I don't even know when the cut date is, but in the 40-ish crowd, they're in there too.
All right, why don't you frame up for a second, like, talk to me about who are we talking with? Like, what are their life circumstances and why do they care?
Yeah, I think it's
maybe
people,
it's not an age thing or a label thing. It's just like, who are these people that we gotta sort out?
I think it's people that, you know, like I said, they're just not near retirement.
Okay, so they're in the accumulation phase. Let's say, like, all right, you're still building a nest egg at this point.
Correct. All right. Yeah, and you've got the energy to do this, right?
Yeah, and by the way, with why the building a nest egg? Again, because the whole inflation thing, that's kind of what kills nest eggs. P.S., did you know that nest eggs don't necessarily have to be what we traditionally think of, like a big pot of money somewhere?
No, and that's, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because this strategy that I'm going to propose is actually designed for the person that's not sitting on a huge sum of cash.
Okay, perfect.
Good point. And what it really comes down to, the first one that I kind of had in mind was buy out the boomers, right? So the way that SBA loans work, you can sometimes buy a company for as little as 10% down.
Okay, buy out the businesses of boomers.
Yes.
I was like, man, buy them out. I'm pretty sure we don't do that anymore. but no, you mean they have businesses that are going to buy those
out.
Like.
Yep. did you know that, like, right now, boomers are holding 70% of all small business in the United States?
You know, if you asked me to pull the statistic out of a hat, I didn't know the number, but it does not
it's
surprise
me.
It's
a lot, right?
It
like, almost three out of every four.
Yeah, that makes sense. Doesn't mean they're the largest, but I would say they are, like, the most Main Street businesses, and they're, you know.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. If, you know, you've got $50,000 sitting around, and you can afford to put that towards a business, well, you might be able to buy a $500,000 business with only $50,000 down. And, you know, a lot of these SBA loans are allowing you to spread those payments out over a lot of years. And so we're coming into this era, I think, where you're going to see a lot of businesses changing hands over the next 10 to 15 years. The estimates are like over 12 million businesses are expected to start changing hands.
So here's, interesting. There's a number of people follow, a lot of entrepreneurs in the social spaces and a lot of them on YouTube and so forth. They talk about this conundrum that there's a whole bunch of businesses owned by baby boomers and they don't, when we say they transition, a lot of them may sunset. Because there's actually no apparent heir to come in and take over.
Yep.
Right. So they just sort of shutter the business because those are really interesting opportunities for some folks that are willing to come, especially because some of these businesses are operating with legacy systems.
Sure.
Right. And so, hey, they're pretty analog. You know, maybe you see a garage or something that's been kind of a local but trusted, you know, mom and pop sort of situation. And they're still doing a lot of handwritten receipts and that kind of stuff. And it's an opportunity to come in and bring technology to sort of modernize and make more efficient.
Sure.
And so that's a scenario where you might be able to step in to take over a business like that. And you don't even necessarily have to finance it because the person that is exiting the business may say, well, how about we work a deal out? I'll kind of play bank for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll transition the ownership to you. And during that transition, we'll revenue share, right? So some of the income the business was earning, you're going to take over and you're going to get it, but some of it's going to go to me as part of my buyout. And what you did was you just created a financing situation.
Right.
Where the business owner, using their cash flow, is helping you buy them out.
Right. It's a kind of a win-win situation, right?
It really is.
Yeah, you know? Because they might have just, like you said, shut it down completely with no heir to the throne on this thing. And they'd rather see that business continue to serve its clients and, you know, flourish a lot
and
of the time.
And some of them will, you know, sell and they'll find business brokers and things like that. And you know, that's a whole other animal. I mean, I'll admit, I've never worked through a business broker before to look at buying businesses. I will say that I've been involved in business acquisition before.
Right.
But it was organic. right? Mm-hmm. The way that the relationships kind of came together and the way the deal was structured just sort of was a natural progression rather than shopping around for something and then negotiating terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, though. If we have this many businesses that are expected to start kind of changing hands, mm-hmm. this seems like a way when rates are high, right? Because that's kind of the focus. We've got high rates and we've got a dollar that seems, if you can't save your way through it, how do you make those dollars multiply?
Okay, so let me ask you kind of a trick question. You suggest buying out the boomers, but how does that solve the problem of a weakening dollar?
I think it's because you're able to, you know, especially if you have any business savvy to you, you're going to be able to potentially go get some business that maybe hasn't had any marketing, for example, right? Like it's just been a business that's been word of mouth. And if you go in and you get a good deal out of the gate, you could then grow maybe a $100,000 company to a $200,000 company and turn around and sell it, right? Like you don't always have to hold this thing to infinity.
It's really fascinating, right? Here, because I'm going to let a little secret out, because, and Matt knows this, and the team at Little John knows this. I really love small business consulting.
Do you know?
I'm kind of, yeah, but it's like, what a shocker, right? There's a ton of opportunity in optimization, especially for businesses that have been kind of running for a while, but the owner has been traditionally one that just sort of provides the service and stays active in the business, but they don't work on the business. So for the entrepreneurial personality, there's real opportunity set here, particularly if you have businesses that have pretty good market demand because they may have pricing power, right? Not every business is going to be easy, right? I mean, like you can't go buy a plumbing business per se if you're not a plumber, unless you can somehow buy the business and keep the plumber,
right?
And that's, it's not impossible, but
it's just more difficult,
challenging, right? Because typically speaking, you kind of need the skill set, right?
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, it is something that is doable. You know, if there's more than one plumber, and you know, it's a more of an enterprise level deal than it is just a like an entrepreneur that's got their own shingle out there.
Mm-hmm.
So this to suggest that there may be a lot of businesses for sale, and if you have an entrepreneurial tilt to your personality, there could be some real opportunity for you out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and you gotta look at this lens, right? Because I look at real estate, and even though there's still potential in it, right, the barrier to entry has gotten a lot higher because prices on real estate have gone way up, and $50,000 isn't really going to get you much of a down payment if you want to do a rental. And I think you start looking at, like, what do you have to pay for something, especially in this area, right? In Oregon, where a starter home's $400,000.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, how do you, I mean, this isn't, you know, our grandparents' economy where it's go buy a cheap house, rent it, right? Like, I feel like people are having to get more and more creative and think more and more outside of the box.
Okay. So it sounds like the first solution that you're proposing is, if the dollar's getting weaker, one of the things you need
make
to do
more
is
dollars.
Figure out how to find more dollars.
That's exactly what I'm
saying.
Okay,
and so I like that because this is, it's traditionally, there's a certain Dave Ramsey appeal to this or Dave Ramsey recipe to it of like, look, pick up a second job or whatever else. The issue with that is it's not sustainable long term.
No, it's not. There's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah, but there, it does pair well with the other parts of his strategy that suggest get your overhead lower. Right now, what in really simple terms, you need to spend less than you make, even in an environment where the dollar is weaker. So, you know, there needs to be some budget accountability here.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always said there's two basic ways to handle a not enough money problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your two pathways are you can cut spending or you can drive revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what Matt has just laid out for all of you is a pathway to potentially drive revenue.
Right.
Okay. So I like it. Yeah. Are there any other things that you think people can consider?
I think there's things that you need to consider on top of all of this, right? Because it's easy to say, hey, just go buy a business and make more money, right?
Sure.
But I think there's a lot more to it. Like, you need to improve often for a lot of people your skill set, right? Because how many people just have a raw ability in sales,
mm-hmm.
right? Like a lot of business is sales. And so I think that there is this kind of jump to the next level. Like, do you have basic accounting skills or basic leadership skills? So I think a lot of it is reading, right? Like mm-hmm. you listen to like Charlie Munger, and one of the things he's going to tell you is if you're not reading a lot, then you're just not doing it right, because there's so much knowledge out in the world that you can spend a lifetime trying to acquire it, or you can just read about it and learn it in a matter of a month, right?
Yeah, well, it's way cheaper to borrow somebody else's wisdom than to have to go and get the experience
learn it the
yourself,
hard way. Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so this is this idea of stacking your skills, not just your savings, right?
So I love this. This actually is a throwback to something I've used to talk about many years. Something that Matt and I didn't talk about before the show, but it's super relevant to this.
Mm.
You want to know what it is?
Yeah.
Of course you do, but I'm going to make you wait. We got to take a break.
Okay.
We will come back. And when we do, Matt, I'm going to talk about how does a person get paid more?
Okay.
Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio today with
Matt Dixon.
Matt,
yep.
I really like the way this show is starting to come together, talking about just the way the dollar has,
right.
has lost a lot of purchasing power. God, the money printing thing was really something.
Right.
And you can see it catching up in the system, all the inflation and whatnot. I don't know about you, but it's hard to really call this a surprise, other than when it finally arrived at the door.
Yeah.
Right? I feel a little bit like we ordered something overseas and it got shipped on a boat and then we just weren't sure. It's not like Amazon where it's the next day or two. It's like, oh, teaming is going to take a little while, right? And, mm-hmm. and like before, and then it shows up and you're like, oh, there you are. I knew this was coming.
Right.
And so the dollar keeps getting softer, and we know our government prints money by design, right? The Federal Reserve has an inflation target. They want inflation. It's part of the design.
Right. Because, and we hinted at it earlier, what if it's not inflation? What if it's deflation and things are going down in price? It's that, like, ooh.
And the biggest problem with that, I don't want to spend a ton of time. The biggest problem is when you get into a deflationary cycle, how do you break it?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If we really do get to a point where the federal government is spending so much on interest that it can't afford to do anything else but make interest payments,
yeah.
then the solution is austerity, right? Where the government is forced to cut programs to save money. And what that does is it's harmful economically, because now the government as an economic participant is shrinking, and it's the largest employer in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Like the U.S. federal government is the largest employer in the world. So the economy notices if it has to go through austerity. Mm. And that's the challenge, is deflationary cycles. So let's not talk about that. That's not very fun.
Yeah, no. You're like,
let's
depressing.
Talk about tacos, right? Anything but that. you talked about if the dollar is really getting weaker right now,
mm-hmm.
and some of it by design, some of it by incompetence in government, and it's always easy to throw rocks, right?
Sure.
That's fun on the radio. Let's throw some rocks. But
how
if
do
the
we
dollar's weaker,
yeah.
the first one is you got to figure out how to make more. And you
yep.
talked about, hey, folks that are still in your working years, there's going to be businesses taken that are going to be able to transition. You might be able to take over a business and improve your income position.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So there are only a couple of things that I think people do that make them more valuable to earn more money. And
what are the two things that you're thinking about?
Scarcity and leverage.
Okay. Right? Can you give the listeners a little bit of an understanding of what you mean
Absolutely.
By those two things?
Scarcity is you do something that people either are unwilling to do, don't want to do for whatever reason, or they can't do. Okay.
Okay.
I like to use LeBron James as the example, mostly because it's a name that people hear, but maybe I should use like Steph Curry or somebody more likable these days. Because when you do something nobody else can do, then people want to see it, or you know, it has to be something that has some perception of value, right? But the best basketball players in the world, people want to watch them play.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, what you have is that person can put the effort in one time and they can have many, many, many eyeballs watching them, right? So they get the leverage of how many people can they watch them and how can they get a little piece of everybody's eyeballs. That's the advertising model, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's that scarcity that makes it valuable. Just like if you have, like gold is more scarce than aluminum, right? Aluminum is really common compared to gold. And so gold, because of its rarity, has higher perceived value. Okay. It's the same thing if you do a really dangerous job, right? People won't just do it. So you have to pay a lot of money to convince somebody to risk their safety to do a high risk job, right? That's a scarcity example. Okay. Leverage is a little bit different. Leverage is just like with your home. Hey, I use a little bit of money to control a larger asset.
Right.
Or I get help from other people. This is an example, like in a business, why does the CEO get a lot more money? Well, typically they carry a lot more liability, but if the owner of a business has 100 people working for him, he doesn't take the profits of the company and divide it 100% amongst everybody there.
Right.
He negotiates the wage with every person working there, and then the profit above and beyond that can be his, and it can be in excess of the wage negotiation because of the leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So those are these two simple pathways, scarcity and leverage, and then the rest of it's just application, right? How are you going to apply this in real life? So that we can kind of take for, you know, into business. You can take it into working for somebody else and improving your skill set. But what we don't get to do is say something like, well, let me take a job where the pathway is predefined, right? This is the issue with a government job typically. The steps are defined. And with the exception of maybe a union negotiation opportunity, largely you kind of know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And so that pathway being set, you're not going to change the pathway.
Right.
Not significantly. And so as a result, you know, you kind of agree to that, trade your time for this scenario, right? But you're mm-hmm. going to lose the scarcity or the leverage flexibility if you set the pathway and let somebody else dictate the terms.
Right.
All right. All this now to pivot to, well, that's great, how to deal with dollars if you're still earning. But, you know, a lot of the people in our community, they are not working anymore. They are at or in the retirement phase where they're taking money out of accounts, not putting it in.
Mm-hmm.
How did they navigate an environment where inflation's hitting them?
Yeah, it can be tough, and that's a really big question.
So why don't you work that out, Matt? I think I'm going to go outside and have a sandwich.
Okay.
And you just
there
let
you
the
go.
Listeners know how you got this handled.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we talk about a lot at our firm is kind of reverse engineering everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's looking at, well, what is it that you actually have? You've done the accumulation phase. Here it is. Here's all the cards on the table. And so it's like, well, how do we kind of build your lifestyle around, you know, the income that's available? And so
this is a not so subtle plug for actual financial planning.
Yeah, yeah, because a lot of people don't know, and they're just shooting up from the hip.
I'm going to give you a chance to do like the elevator commercial on this one.
Mm.
Explain what financial planning means.
Can you cue the elevator music?
Well, I'm going to let you explain it, and then I'll cue the elevator music for the next segment.
Oh, there
I
you
want
go.
You to be able to explain it.
No,
first.
Basically, I think it kind of all... There you go. That's what I was looking for.
Okay.
I think one of the basic steps in this is where you sit down together and you look at what are all of the different things that I have.
Sorry. Let me help. I mean, I don't want the how do you do it.
Oh.
I want to know, like, what the heck is financial planning? Like,
financial planning to me is the guardrails, right? Like, you can spend up to this amount or, you know, before things start to break.
Okay. So this is literally, the planning is like, we're going to get out a pencil and paper, figure out what you're working with, what you need, and it's the actual decisions around
yes.
how much can you spend, how much should you save, what's your rate of return that you're looking for,
yeah.
the math to tell you how you need to go about, and then sort of engineering the strategy to the requirements of your,
exactly,
your financial,
right? Because you can't figure, you know, out like how am I going to do a Roth conversion? How much? You can't know any of that until you address the stuff you just talked about.
Do I need a Roth conversion?
Right.
Proper planning would identify that, right?
Because
you're saying, and now is where now give like the quick version of like, okay, well, how?
Yeah.
Right? That's the take inventory, mm-hmm, set goals, then match the two together and reverse engineer,
exactly,
the strategy to accomplish it, right?
Yeah.
And that means navigating everything from taxes to assumed rates of returns to inflation to irregular cash flow needs. You know, all that stuff kind of gets baked into the pie. And then you can actually say, should I do a Roth conversion?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, it depends on your circumstance.
Yeah. I think a lot of people just naturally assume, well, I should be in this asset class because, and then they just throw a reason out. And it's like, well.
Or my favorite is, well, my IRA is an asset class.
Oh.
And my other account is a different asset class. And I go,
yeah.
No.
It's all your money.
It's a different tax treatment. Like, mm-hmm, IRAs are different tax treatment than brokerage accounts. But the investments are what they hold. The account is not the investment. The account tells the IRS how to treat the taxes.
Yeah.
So look, so this is a good place to hit the pause button before our last break, because for all of you out there that are wondering, how might we optimize or get more mileage out of the dollars we have? Because if we're not adding more, right? So we're going to touch on some of the concepts of financial planning. And if you're in the market and you may need something like this, what kind of questions should you be asking? And what are some of the options out there for you? But we do need to grab our last break. So we'll do that when we come back, right? We're going to unpack this, all right? So we cool with that?
I like it.
All right, we're going to do that. We're going to see how Matt does. It'll be super exciting. All right, stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where I have some very good news for you.
Is it the best news they've heard all day?
It is, probably.
Okay.
I checked with AI on how Matt's going to do on this next segment, and it said he's going to crush it.
What's funny is it actually like was able to find everything, and it's like, he's been doing this since 2021. He's fine.
He's like, he's got this. He'll be fine. He generally knows his stuff. So let's put him to the test. I like this also because Matt really has crafted a significant portion of this show, and then my job is to throw curveballs at him today.
Mm.
Super awesome.
I prefer a slider, but we'll try and hit those curveballs too.
I will just say, like, my elbow is just not what it used to be, and so, like,
we'll get you that Tommy John surgery
for me. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, the calluses build up and whatever. So, how can our crowd that is in the distribution phase,
mm-hmm,
of their retirement, how can they stretch those dollars and reach for some efficiency? And let's just, you know, these are not going to be, everybody should do this.
No, but it's like, just like, what's some things that maybe we've been seeing lately?
Just share some concepts of what's out there for our listeners so that if they want to go find a financial planner, say a not so subtle plug for Little John Financial again, and they are like, hey, you know, what should I be asking about, or, you know, what should I, you know, go do my Google search on, or ChatGPT this thing or whatever. So what are some of the things out there?
I know one of the ones that a lot of people have been kind of leaning towards lately has been delaying Social Security. And so instead of maybe retiring at age 67, if you like your job and you're passionate about it,
mm-hmm,
and maybe you want a little bit more lifestyle when in retirement, you want to maybe travel more or something, sometimes people are opting to say, you know what, I'll work another 2 or 3 years and I will get more of a benefit when I go to file my Social Security.
There's also a strange amount of, it's not amount, there's a strange magic to this because it's so simple, the formula that sometimes people overcomplicate it thinking there's real math involved. I'm like, no, wait. If you wait 2 years longer to retire, that's two more years to save and two fewer years to spend.
Well, and I think that's a 16% boost in your payout, too.
Kind of depends on when, like, you're talking about. But basically, Social
Security
grows. I think
it's like every year past 62, it's like an 8%
No,
bump.
It's after full retirement age. Right, so you get from 62 is early retirement age. Full retirement age is somewhere between 65 and 67, depending on your birth rate. But most people now, it's getting close to 67, right? And then from 67 to 70, you get 8% per year increase in your Social Security. But it does stop at the age of 70, so there's really no benefit to waiting longer than that.
Well, no. So, that could be an easy way for you to take that extra vacation to Hawaii every year, right?
Right. So, yeah, because, you know, you look at, hey, 32% more.
Yeah.
Right?
It's 8%
a year. Or wait, 24%. Yeah, that's math, right? I'm not a numbers guy. So 24% more money in Social Security. Now, you do defer the gratification, right? You don't get it as soon. And so there's some trade-offs there. But, that could be one way to increase your income.
And maybe if you have a family history of longevity where everyone in your family is living to 105.
Yeah, then it might make more sense.
Yeah.
How about this as a side question? What do you say to people that say Social Security is going to run out of money?
Imagine how much you would be hated if you are a government official and you propose cutting Social Security.
I just laugh and go, hello, we created 40% of all dollars in existence in the last few years. You don't think they can crank up the printing machine and say Social Security's fixed?
Right? Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, once people figure out they can vote themselves a raise, you know, who needs fiscal accountability, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what else can people do?
Well, you know, we talked about this as potentially like a negative for someone in the accumulation phase where, you know, money sitting in a high-yield savings account might be a bad option, right? Instead of like going out and being a little bit more aggressive and trying to find ways to make your money grow faster. But if you're in this phase of life where, you know, you are just trying to generate interest income, right? Or something like that, we are kind of in a unique situation where rates are higher, right? If money markets are around 4 to 5% and high yields are paying sometimes right now north of 7%, it's like, well, if you do have free cash just sitting on the side where you're able to invest it, you might be able to generate income with like some bonds where you maybe make a little bit of a bond ladder. So stuff that is maturing maybe every year between now and the next few years. Right.
Yeah. Like, it's funny because I think about in the simplest terms, you can retune investment portfolios to favor more current income and less appreciation.
You could. Yeah.
Right. You know, because there's kind of two parts to every investment. There's the growth portion. And I would say like, that's the tree getting bigger. And then there's the income portion. And that's the tree bearing fruit.
Right.
Right. And they're not really the same thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Limbing the tree is when you're selling off profits. Picking the fruit is the interest or dividend payments.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of a really overly simplified visual there. But you can remodel your investments to gear them towards throwing off current income if that is something that you need to do.
Right.
Right. It's hard to take an investment portfolio that's supposed to, you know, produce 4 to 6% total return for the year and turn it into an 8 or 10% returner.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't really work that way. It's not like you can say, right. Well, I want 12% income.
But
so
you're
I'll
saying
just conjure that.
Right. But you're saying on the back end, kind of the opposite. If someone's comfortable with that 6% range and that's going to fund their lifestyle, it's now a lot more maybe doable with consistency than it had been in the past prior years.
It may
years.
Be targetable. And that is something that competent financial planner can help you do is kind of get a sense of here's the other that people sometimes misunderstand the difference between altitude hold and glide slope, as I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about it as, hey, can I just spend the interest on my investments and then my nest egg stays the same?
Right.
Or do I have to slowly whittle away at my nest egg?
A lot of people ask that question. Yeah.
And the answer is it is not inherently wrong to spend down your nest egg. You just need to make sure that you kind of have some rules in place so that you don't outlive your money.
Right. Or, yeah, that the rate that you're spending at isn't too aggressive.
You don't want splashdown to come before you run out of money.
Mm-hmm.
Or wait. No, you don't want to run out of money before splashdown. Is that what I mean?
I think listeners get what you're trying to say.
I don't want to do that. All right, never mind.
How about this? You just don't want to run out of money.
You don't want to run out of money while you're still here. That would be a bummer.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if you can run out of money on your last breath, you did it. Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I am of the opinion, hey, maybe don't burn it that close.
Yeah.
And so, like, if there's a little bit left over, somebody will get it. It'll be fine. But, you know, that's not because you ruined it. That's mm-hmm. just because, hey, a little bit of margin there. But, hey, I slept better at night, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with that.
Here's another interesting thought, right? What about gifting early, right? So, like, say...
But how does that actually increase your money?
Maybe not yours, but your future generations, right? Like,
yeah.
say you're, say you've got a larger estate, right? And you're fighting a state that has crazy estate taxes like Oregon. What if you were able to gift away some of it and then let that younger person be more aggressive with the money than you? Because if you were aggressive with it and it worked, then you just multiplied your estate issues.
Well, there is a certain element of truth to that. So it all shows up in the efficiency concept is if you're not going to spend it all, how do you efficiently get it to somebody else?
Mm-hmm.
Is dying with it the best pathway? Is gifting it away the best pathway?
This is why we seek wise counsel.
It is indeed. So the moral of the story here as I look at the final seconds of our call is that, yes, the dollar is weaker. There are things that you can do about it. And working with a pro could help. If you've got somebody in your life, go talk to them. If you don't, give us a call. We're happy to help. How do they reach us, Matt?
Yep, 541-375-0898. You can call us. You can text us. You can email us. However you want to get a hold of us, just get a hold of us.
Yeah, we're pretty flexible. So, again, it doesn't cost anything to get a second opinion. We're happy to do that for you. But looking at the clock, we're out of time for the day. So until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.